meter thickness at the top, 10 meters high. It was a semicircle 150 meters in diameter, open to the sea. Local artists were hired to paint bright murals on the land side, but it was still an eyesore. The local fono was appeased by a school bus and two stained glass windows for the Methodist church. In the event of an explosion, all the force that would have gone landward should be diverted straight up or expended on destroying the blast wall, which was made of a foamed concrete that would boil off rather than break. But they were months away from Jupiter. The original plan had been to start with Mercury, but the technical staff argued for doing Mars first. Two of the techs, Naomi and Moisha, had gone to Florida and been fitted with modified NASA spacesuits and spent a few weeks training with them. They could comfortably enter the Martian environment and check out the situation. Mercury was marginal. Their suit's air conditioning could only handle it for short periods. It was logical to start the experiment under conditions that allowed continuous direct human contact. So, for the first couple of days, Naomi and Moisha walked around on their 10th acre of Mars, checking the place for leaks from the outside world, running tests on all the sensors and communication devices in the relatively clement environment. Only relatively. The atmospheric pressure was pumped down to about a hundredth that of sea level, and there was no oxygen in their brew, just carbon dioxide with traces of nitrogen and argon. It was refrigerated down to minus 100 degrees centigrade and cycled up to a balmy 26, simulating the Martian equator during the summer. The ambient light was dim and pink, heavy on the ultraviolet. The environment caused no serious problems, so Jan essentially repeated the 3-minute Drake message over and over, tapping it out and blinking it in various wavelengths, in a pattern they would repeat in every environment. Radio waves to microwaves, through visible light to ultraviolet. They didn't go up into gamma or X-rays, which they felt could be perceived as aggression. In the original back-of-the-menu plan, they started with radio waves at a wavelength of 1 meter, and then went to a tenth of a meter, and then microwaves at 1 centimeter, and so forth, the seventh and eighth iterations being ultraviolet. But Jack pointed out that there was nothing special about the number 10, except for creatures who have 10 tentacles or fingers, so to be non-provincial about it, they used 9.8696, pi squared, as the divisor. The artifact tolerated Mars but didn't remark on it, so they pumped out the thin gruel of its atmosphere and substituted the hot vacuum of Mercury. A blazing artificial sun crawled across the sky while Jan's message patiently tapped and bleeped and blinked through the inferno, 600 degrees Kelvin, hot enough to melt lead. But Mercury was a picnic spot compared to Venus. They stayed on the safe side of the blast wall and pumped in hot carbon dioxide, 90 atmospheres of it at 737 degrees Kelvin. As had been true with Mercury, the artifact's temperature rose at exactly the same rate as the ambient temperature. Its response to Jan's message was the same silence. They slowly brought the temperature and pressure back down to Samoan ambience, warm for North Americans, if fatally frigid for Venusians. Some wiring and components had been stressed too much, and it hadn't been easy on the human components either, so they took a few days off while replacement parts were assembled and shipped from various countries, and everybody took a short vacation over on the more old-fashioned island, Savai. After you'd seen the famous blowholes, there wasn't a lot to do unless you were a surfer with a death wish, so they mostly walked around enjoying the peacefulness. Some of them watched or played cricket. Jan engaged an old woman to teach her how to paint the traditional siapo cloth, and she spent a couple of afternoons doing that, making souvenir placemats for her grandchildren while listening to the hypnotic ocean crash, sipping the local fruit juice, not thinking about much. Trying not to. They stayed at the venerable Safua Hotel, which was actually just a bunch of cottages around the central fall, where a buffet feast was offered for supper and an automated bar served as a social focus. There was no cube on the island, by law, so the evening entertainment was homemade. Russ and Naomi played chess, while most of the others listened to a pickup band of local kids who alternated modern music with traditional Samoan. They tried to teach everybody how to dance.